Once you break consumer trust, it's really hard to regain it. A bit like integrity, you can take a lifetime to build up a reputation for integrity and then you can lose it in 1 minute. And I think it's really important on both governments and industry to ensure that the trust which can be broken so quickly, as we've seen in more recent times, is developed so that consumers, as they become more and more aware and more appreciative of the extent to which data is being collected and used in relation to their daily lives, can say, yes, we trust these organisations to use it properly.
We're in a world awash with data, and it's changing our lives, but it's not always for the best. While seemingly a goldmine for business, its value can mean a headache for government as cybersecurity issues threaten individual privacy. A new Essential poll has found that more than half of all Australians have little or no trust in the government to store their data. From reluctance to participate in the last census due to retention of personal details, to the recent revelation that Medicare numbers are being sold on the dark web, there's concern all around about the use of data. Graham Samuel is a former chairman of the Australian Competition and Consumer Commission, and he now chairs the recently formed Data Governance Australia, which promotes the responsible use of data. He's also a professor at the Monash Business School. We caught up with him when he was in Canberra to deliver a speech to the National Press Club. Graham Samuel, can you tell us something of Data Governance Australia?
Data Governance Australia was established in October 2016 as a result of a view taken by the 650 members of the Association of Data-Driven Marketing and Advertising, that's called ADMA, that there was a need to establish much greater trust on the part of the community in data collection, data use, aggregation, data analytics, and that the way to do that was to establish a self-regulatory code that would be subject to appropriate enforcement. So Data Governance Australia has been established to produce that self-regulatory code. There's a code authority that enforces the code. The code authority consists of seven members, three from industry, three from consumer groups, and an independent chair, Christopher Zinn, who will be well known to those who have followed the activities of choice. So it is there to provide an enforceable compliance code relating to the use and aggregation and the analysis of data. Those companies, those industries and businesses that subscribe to the code will have a trust mark, a bit like a sort of a hard association tick. If you haven't got that trust mark, then consumers will be able to properly raise questions as to whether or not the company concerned, the business concerned, is dealing with data in a way that can engender that trust.
Now, you mentioned an enforceable code. Apart from that branding mark, as it were, what other sorts of enforcement procedures would be used?
Can be a range of procedures, ranging from, if you like, very, very small breaches, which would lead to requirements to rectify, through to significant or even repeated breaches, which could lead to loss of membership of Data Governance and, as a result, loss of the mark. And that loss of the mark is very significant because what will happen is as more and more businesses subscribe to the code, so the community will be able to say, in this area of data, where we have some concerns in a whole range of areas, we believe we can trust the companies that have got the mark. But we've got question marks over the companies that don't have the mark.
And what sort of provisions are in the code?
There's a range of provisions surrounding, I'll call them eight or nine principles, but they're provisions that relate to honesty, fairness, a no-harm rule, which, as the heading suggests, is a rule that encompasses a range of provisions that no harm will be done to consumers. There are provisions there, that, for example, about the sharing of data between various businesses, so that you can be confident as a consumer that if your data is collected by a particular business, it will not be shared with other businesses if on request you ask that not be shared, or importantly, you ask details of where it's going to be shared. So these are provisions all designed to engender trust, to meet what I'll call community expectations. We've got to remember this, that when government regulates, government will tend to be about 2 years behind government expectations. Government expectations will be, or committee expectations will be raised by a particular event, which will lead to media examination, which will lead to media reports, and then government says, we'd better have a look at this. They'll conduct a review, which can go for several months. The review then goes to government. Government considers the review, determines what it might do, and then we go through a process of preparing government regulation. As one minister said to me many, many months ago, he said, if you can get this right, he said, that will be very important to us, he said, because, first of all, you know that government tends to have regulatory overreach if it involves self-regulation. But secondly, government regulation is inflexible. It doesn't respond quickly enough to community expectation, community concerns, and this is where a code might be able to achieve that objective.
Now, obviously, businesses are recognising the need to get greater public confidence in the way they handle data. But more broadly, what sort of feedback have you been receiving from business? Are there some in business who think this is going to shackle their activities or don't want to be subjected to scrutiny?
We've spent something like 9 months preparing the draft code, which has gone out for public consultation. That's involved interaction with businesses across supermarkets, finance companies, banks, those involved in data analytics, those involved in data assessment and collection. So there's a range of businesses that have been involved in the drafting of the code and extensive, if you like, private consultation. And I think it's fair to say that the code as now out in a consultation form represents procedures, processes and compliance requirements that have been accepted by broadly by the businesses that are represented on the board of Data Governments Australia. The public consultation process has been interesting. There's been very little response to date from organisations that we thought would have responded, other than to get a response that says, you've actually gone much further than we thought you might have gone. You've actually provided much tougher requirements than we thought might have come from industry. Now, that's heartening, because what that's saying is that that's meeting, as I always said in the beginning when we launched Data Governments Australia, not only existing community expectations, but it's trying to anticipate community expectations and community concerns into the foreseeable future.
While you might get more flexibility and speed out of a voluntary code, in the end, isn't there an argument that government regulation might be necessary for the recalcitrant cases?
I think that's something that we'll have to wait and see. If government says to us, let's give this a chance, this self-regulatory process a chance, let's see how it works, then it'll be up to industry as to whether it adopts the code or as to whether there are rogues out there that don't adopt the code and that conduct themselves in a manner that really raises significant community concerns. As a former regulator, I have to say to you that I regard government regulation as second best. The best regulation is that's imposed by business on itself, most often as a result of empowering consumers through transparency, through a process of consumers being able to say, I can trust an organisation because I know the way it operates. I know the principles by which its activity is governed, and therefore I'm prepared to deal with it. Now, that's how competition works really well. Government regulation is there to step in where there's market failure.
Now, obviously, the sharing of public sector data with the private sector has the potential to generate a lot of economic value, up to $25 billion per year, it's been said. But won't the public become increasingly concerned about that sort of sharing, even if there's a code, even if there are safeguards?
I think that that's part of the community expectations or concerns that the code needs to address. The difficulty is that I don't think consumers fully understand or appreciate the extent to which data is driving their daily lives at the present time. From the moment they wake up in the morning to the moment they go to sleep, and then even while they're asleep, data is there and has been accumulated in relation to their daily activities. And consumers, in many respects, either don't know or in many respects don't care. they can see the benefits of data being gathered together and aggregated, and it's providing a different lifestyle, a different process by which they conduct their daily lives. Where consumers become concerned is where they discover a situation arising that is beyond whatever their reasonable concerns and expectations are about. It's the sort of thing we've seen, for example, in more recent times where there have been potential breaches of data, the sale of Medicare numbers and the like, and suddenly consumers become concerned. What is happening? What are the safeguards that are there in place? And therefore, it's incumbent on governments and on industry, business, those that are collecting data, those that are sharing it, to be able to deal with these matters in a way that ensures that consumer trust is there. Once you break consumer trust, it's really hard to regain it. A bit like integrity. You can take a lifetime to build up a reputation for integrity, and then you can lose it in 1 minute. And I think it's really important on both governments and industry to ensure that the trust, which can be broken so quickly, as we've seen in more recent times, is developed so that consumers, as they become more and more aware and more appreciative of the extent to which data is being collected and used in relation to their daily lives, can say, yes, we trust these organisations to use it properly.
Well, just taking up that question of the Medicare numbers being sold on the dark web, how alarmed should people be about this? And does this have the potential to cause a problem in other areas for public confidence? Yeah.
I think it's a really interesting case study because, according to all the information that I can glean, the sale of Medicare numbers on the dark web actually does very little at all to advantage the buyer. In fact, I'm not sure why they buy them, because it actually doesn't do much at all, and it doesn't provide any really useful data to the buyer. And yet the way it's been broadcast in the sense of the media and part of the political process is that this just shows you the failure of the safeguards relating to your health records, my health record, Medicare, all those sorts of issues. And so what it is, it's a case study as to, number one, how a very small issue can potentially develop into a very significant concern, and secondly, how we've got to have the right communication processes to neutralise some of the over-egging or the hysteria that can be raised about issues that are potentially very minor, but can, through misinformation and disinformation, develop into something of very significant concern to consumers, which then raises their concerns and their expectations as to what might be done in the future.
Now, the Human Services Minister, Alan Tudge, refers to this as a traditional criminal activity rather than using it as something more serious, I guess one might say, about the whole system. Do you see it in those terms, and do you think people would buy it, that sort of description?
Well, it's a bit hard to know because, as I say, my knowledge of it largely flows from what I read in the newspapers. The newspapers, depending on which one you read, have tended to treat it in different ways. The minister has indicated that it is a criminal offence, the sale of this information. But he's also indicated, as best I understand it, that the consequences to consumers are marginal at most. In fact, they're probably almost irrelevant. And it seems to me that the criminal process is one that obviously the enforcement authorities have to deal with. My greater concern is to ensure that consumers are not misinformed or misled into believing that there's been a disastrous consequence in terms of their private health records flowing from the sale of these Medicare numbers. And that's why I think is where the communication process becomes very important. The minister's been dealing with that of recent time.
But as we see the rollout of centralised online record system of health data, is this going to be something that really people will start to fear more than see the advantages of?
I think that's always the risk. The risk is that when you have a breach, and then either politically or in terms of the media, the breach is raised. It's raised at times to almost hysterical levels. That what it does is it engenders distrust on the part of consumers, and then we see some of the advantages of related data sharing and data-driven processes then being harmed. Now, in my view is that My Health Record is a very significant advantage to consumers, very significant advantage. We all experience the circumstance of going to see a specialist doctor, and before you go in, you're given an ancient clipboard And you have to fill out details of all surgery you've had since the day you were born. As we get a bit older, that gets a bit hard to remember all those surgical interventions. But here we are doing this, and yet it is vitally important to the practitioner that's going to see you to know everything that's occurred. And they adopt the process of making inquiries to make sure you put it all down. Think how much thorough and safer it is if my health record is there, listing all those interventions, all the health issues you've had to deal with, so that a practitioner who's never met you before and potentially is about to undertake a significant procedure knows all the issues and all the risks associated with that that might be impacted by your previous health record. So my health record, to my mind, is a really, really important process. And it's a pity it's taken so long, I think, since the Julia Gillard government first introduced it. It's taken so long to get to the point it's got to now. I hope that the processes that are in place in relation to it are absolutely secure, so we don't have any risk of a rogue issue arising. But more importantly, the more that we can engender trust, the more that consumers will feel comfortable about being involved with My Health Record, and then we'll see the advantages of it.
Do you think this seems scary to people because it's a broad system and something that most of us don't quite understand how it works? Because after all, we don't fear a break into our doctor's surgery, do we, and our record stolen?
I think you've raised a really interesting comparison, because we don't fear that, and yet all the records are there, most often in hard copy form, and your file can be picked up, can be taken, and it's all there, it's all listed.
So, and often with many staff with access to those records.
Well, yes, and remember this, that in the doctor's surgery, there are many staff, some of whom, or one or two of whom, may become disgruntled staff on dismissal and be taking your health records with you. On my analysis of it, my health record is far more secure than any of the hard copy procedures that my general practitioner has, and I'm actually totally relieved to think that my health record is there, that all the information is there, and that in the event that there is the necessity of a significant intervention by another practitioner, that it's there for that practitioner to know. The circumstance of where you're in an accident and you're taken into a trauma centre in a hospital, don't we want that hospital to know all the issues relating to your previous health concerns and your health procedures, rather than having to guess, particularly if you're not in a state to be able to provide advice yourself?
And anyway, in many cases, this information is not going to be particularly of use to a thief, is it?
Well, I'm not sure what damage is. I was trying to think about my own history, which goes back a few decades. I'm not sure that there is any disadvantage to me in the world knowing the interventions that I've had. I mean, I'm happy to talk about them. So I often wonder whether, in fact, the issue of privacy or concerns about privacy in relation to health are, for a vast majority of our population, of significant concern. Now, there will be those that will say, now, hold on, if I'm going to go for life assurance, or if I'm going to go for health insurance, or if I'm going to go for financial applications, that there are aspects of my health that I don't know, I don't want the business concerned to be aware of. There are actually concepts of iubere fidei, which is good faith, where you have to make full disclosure in any event, otherwise the contract's void. So I'm not sure there's anything to be gained by the so-called privacy concerns that we're worried about in this area.
One big frontier in this debate about data seems to be around rights and ownership. And one example of this being questioned is consumer loyalty programs. Where do you think the balance between consumer rights and business innovation lies, and especially in relation to these programs?
If we look at these programs, the loyalty programs for supermarkets and other aspects of what the Productivity Commission has recently provided a report upon, I think what we get into is a really interesting balance between consumer rights, consumer ability to have data readily accessible that then can enhance the competitive process, versus the incentive or the disincentive that might be created to business to innovate. So we all want the competitive process to be enhanced in one way or another. And the competitive process is enhanced where businesses can have relevant data that will be able to say to those organising the business, if I can do the following things then I have a competitive advantage over my competitor. What I really wonder, though, is to the extent to which government needs to get involved in regulating this, as distinct from business saying itself, we actually know how to be more competitive than our competitor. We know where data can assist, and if we're left to be able to innovate, we can innovate in a way that will enhance our competitive offering. One of the best examples is the telcos. And the telcos have, over the years, developed really interesting differential products for both mobile telephony and fixed line. And they relate to broadband usage, they relate to coverage for mobile telephones, and then prices. And consumers, particularly the younger generation, are growing more and more adept at being able to identify those services that they value and those they don't. Now, we know, for example, that Telstra tends to be the more expensive of the mobile telephone providers, but also happens to be the most popular. Why? Because there's a value equation of a dollar cost versus coverage. And there's a sense that Telstra has better coverage. So yeah, Telstra knows what it's marketing. Now we'll see some of the competitors that are out there on public transport marketing that they cover 99% of certain areas. And so they're sensing that this is a competitive advantage. With the supermarkets, we know that price, quality, choice, convenience, all those are factors that are taken into account. But you don't think that the supermarkets don't know this themselves? And how much does one supermarket need to know my buying practices at another supermarket to be able to determine what it is that in different demographic areas will enhance their competitive advantage versus their major competitor? So I'm not sure how far government needs to intervene here, as distinct from industry and competitors in industry saying, we're pretty smart about how we compete. We'll work out how to compete ourselves. Thank you very much.
Now, obviously, your organisation doesn't go to the security area, but this is now a big argument about the use of information and questions of data retention and so on. What is your feeling about issues like the retention of metadata and controls on the use of data?
Well, when you say the Data Governance Australia doesn't go to the issues of security, that's not entirely accurate, because Data Governance Australia is there about engendering trust on the part of consumers. And you don't engender trust if you have insecure processes for gathering data, for transforming it, for aggregating it, for analysing it, and then for retaining it. Because it's the breach that will destroy the trust, the breach of security that will destroy the trust. And so part of the substantial part of the code of conduct that's been published in the consultation form is all about ensuring that customers, consumers, can trust the processes for accessing data, for using it, for aggregating it, and for retaining it. And again, and it was very interesting in the whole debate about metadata, that debate in many respects went off on a certain tangent because of some misinformation that was out there in the public marketplace, engendered as part of political process and as part of other processes, that left consumers with a feeling of concern. And yet I'm willing to bet that if you asked 99.9% of consumers what is metadata, they couldn't tell you.
But in a sense, maybe we're going in two directions here. On the one hand, there's more protection being put in for the coverage of commercial data. But on the other hand, there's more pressure for access to other sorts of data because of the need to protect security.
Yes, and then I'll take it down to a very basic level. When we had a really unfortunate circumstance of a death of an ABC staff member down in Coburg in Melbourne. And it was very interesting. What actually brought about the arrest of the perpetrator of that terribly unfortunate circumstance was data. It was CCTV, it was data tracing the movement of mobile phones, and it ultimately led to the capture and then the conviction of the perpetrator. Very interesting, but at the same time, there were people that came out and said, there's too much CCTV around. You know, it's infringing our privacy, that people are able to watch what we're doing. I'll tell you what, for my safety, thank you very much, I'm quite happy for people to see where I'm going. at the same time, if they can see those that are about to conduct an illegal act and can facilitate the capture of those people and the prevention of that act, I'll be very happy and very, very safe indeed.
So do you think there's the same sort of argument for what Malcolm Turnbull is advocating in terms of being able to get it encrypted data?
Absolutely. And I use that sort of that rather basic example just to show now, as you elevate it further up the line, we need to be careful, of course, that the issue of security in terms of international terrorism and the like is not used as a superficial excuse for the collection of data to be used for other purposes. But where it is being used to deal with significant threats to our safety, significant threats to our daily lives, I say to you, I'll take the, if you like, the constraints offered or the constraints that flow from the collection of that data and the use, and happily have that as the trade-off to be able to have a safer life and a more secure life.
Of course, where you draw the line, though, is always going to be a question for debate, isn't it? And also, the government authorities, once they have the power, can misuse that power or extend that power unacceptably in the future.
And that's the difficulty, that's the debate, and it's also the safeguard that needs to be built in, because Hollywood is the best predictor of what we see in both science, technology and everything else. And Hollywood has shown many, many occasions where data has been gathered together for good reason, but then is able to be used or misused for other reasons. Often quite actually, I've been doing it with Data Governance Australia, the Bourne, Jason Bourne films, and how fascinating it is that the gathering together of data has enabled a rogue organisation to trace the whereabouts of individuals right throughout the world in a matter of seconds. And that shows the misuse that can occur. Now, that's a Hollywood movie, I know, but it also gives you a bit of an indication about how things can be misused by the rogues. It's building in those safeguards that are so important.
Fiction is a guide to fact,
as we've seen so often in Hollywood movies.
Graeme Samuel, thank you very much for talking with us today. And that's all from our podcast. Thank you to my producer, Eliza Burlage. And we'll be back with you with another interview soon. Goodbye for now.